Greetings to everyone, and welcome to the teleclass, The Changing Role of Infection Prevention and Control as Documented by the CBIC Practice Analysis. Now, the award for the longest teleclass title actually belongs to Bill Rotella for a lecture that he gave earlier this year, but I think that one might come in a very close second. My name is Paul Weber, and on behalf of my colleague, Dr. Syed Sattar, I am honored that you have joined us today for what is obviously a very important presentation. Some of you registered right up at the last minute, but I'm sure glad you have. Today, I am absolutely delighted to have two faculty joining us to present this topic, Linda Laxton and Ruth Kircho. I will introduce Ruth to you later when she speaks specifically on the practice analysis results, but first up is CBIC President Linda Laxton. Linda comes to us from the Department of Veterans Affairs in Denver, Colorado, but the reason that she is giving this teleclass is that she is also the 2006 president of the Certification Board of Infection Control. Now, I've met some pretty enthusiastic people in my time, but when it comes to infection control certification, I don't think that there's anyone more passionate and enthusiastic than Linda Laxton. So to get our teleclass started with the practice analysis process, I give you CBIC President Linda Laxton. Linda.
Thank you so much, Paul. And I would like to first start by, on behalf of CBIC, thanking Paul and his teleclasses for giving CBIC the opportunity to do two free telecasts this year. This has been a real blessing for us to be able to get out to people some of the particular things that we do on the certification board and how we develop the exam process. So today's going to be an exciting opportunity for us to share with you some of the initial work from our most recent practice analysis. Now, if you would go to the next slide, please. My primary objective in the presentation today is really to define and describe the development process for a practice analysis. We all use a lot of terms in many ways, and this is a psychometric term, or a measurement term, used in the certification process. So that's what we're going to deal with primarily today. Next slide, please. So to begin with, let me define what a practice analysis is. Now, the technical definition is the process of systematically collecting information that describes behaviors and activities performed by occupants of a specific job for the purpose of defining or validating the content of a certification examination. Now, let me make it a little bit simpler for you. Let me remind you of an opportunity that you had to participate in a survey in October. The actual CBIC practice analysis went out to most APIC and CHICA members in October of last year. It was an email invitation to complete a survey that describes what is important in your particular practice. That particular survey is a practice analysis. So, next slide, please. Why do we do a practice analysis? Well, the first and most important, and that is my phone, and it usually does not ring when I'm on a conference call, but for some reason it is today. The first and most important reason for doing a practice analysis is that it is a required element of a legally defensible certification program. Now, let me kind of give you the difference. And this is something that really I did not understand until I got on the certification board. As ICPs, most of us are familiar with the education process. That's what we do all the time, is educate people. And what we're most familiar with is kind of the post-test concept. You know, you teach a class, and then you have a post-test to assess what people learned. Well, that works pretty good, But when it comes to doing certification, the goal of certification is to assess an individual's competency by objectively measuring knowledge mastery in a particular field. And in order to do that, you must first know what the core practice measures in that field are. In other words, you have to know what practices are common to the majority of infection control practitioners, regardless of the practice setting. A certification exam can't be like a post-test because what we are doing is truly, to the best of our ability, determining someone's competency based on what they know about infection control. And a practice analysis defines what those core components are that everyone doing this profession should know, and therefore what should be included in the certification exam. That's really the key element: is how do we determine what should be included in the practice exam? And it's based on you telling us what your practice consists of. Next slide. Now, that works great the first time around, but, you know, once is never really enough when it comes to changing practice. We really, for an examination to be valid, it really has to reflect current practice. And those of us that have been in infection control for a few years realize how much has changed in our practice just in the last few years. Well, our initial practice analysis was done in 1981. Would a practice analysis or an assessment of what constituted practice in 1981 really reflect what we do today? Now, not at all. I mean, in fact, I was in practice in 1981. And what I do today, some of the core elements are the same, but many, many, many things have changed over that time. So it's very important for a valid examination that truly is measuring what you do is kept current. Our process is to repeat the practice analysis every 5 years, and the most recent one was done distributed in October of last year. Next slide. Now, for the process, the core of the practice analysis is really the survey instrument. What we put on the instrument will help you to tell us what your practice consists of. There are kind of three steps in developing the survey instrument or in the process of the survey instrument, and that is, first, you have to develop the tool itself, then you have to pilot the tool, and then you have to distribute it to the people in the practice. So for the whole practice analysis process to be complete, you have to develop and pilot the survey tool, distribute it to the people doing the practice. Then once you have the results back, you have to analyze the responses to identify those common practices amongst all of the responders. And then from those responses, the analysis of the data, you develop the test specifications for the next exam. Now, I'll get a little more specific into that as we go along, and I'm hoping that we will leave plenty of time for questions and answers at the end so that we can help you get through it. Now, next slide. We use a professional testing agency to assure the validity and reliability of our process, and our particular agency that we use is Applied Measurement Professionals. They have been with us for all of our last six practice analyses, and their expertise is critical in this process to assure that we have both a valid, reliable, legally defensible exam. Next slide. The oversight of the practice analysis comes from a 12-member advisory committee. And the next speaker, Ruth, is the chair of this committee for the most recent practice analysis. Now, membership on this practice analysis comes from members of the CBIC board, particularly members of the CBIC test committee, which is a subcommittee of the CBIC board, and other certified individuals, and particularly wanting to get some at the level in which our exam is targeted, which is around a two-year practice level. So what we want on this committee is a diverse educational background, many work settings represented. Infection control is not an acute care profession. It is in all levels of healthcare these days. So we want to make sure that we cover all the different work settings and that we have regional distribution represented on the committee so that we assure that we are covering issues that are from Canada as well as the U.S. and all parts of both nations and perhaps other areas as well. Now, everyone on the Practice Analysis Advisory Committee must have demonstrated expertise in infection prevention and control, and that's done by being certified as a CSE. So you have to be certified to be on the committee. And the exception to that is our psychometrician. A psychometrician is... I was not familiar with that term until I got on to CBIC, but he is our PhD qualified statistician who really looks at the reliability and validity of each individual item and makes sure that we cover all the appropriate things that are necessary to assure that the exam is a good exam. Next slide. Now, completing a practice analysis is a very lengthy and expensive process. So what I've kind of outlined on the next two slides are the timeline for the most current practice analysis that we are in the middle of now. This process started in June of 2005 with the first meeting of the advisory committee. And at that meeting, they developed the actual survey instrument. In July of 2005, the instrument was piloted, and then in October of 2005, the final survey was distributed to participants, to infection control practitioners around North America. In December of 2005, the return deadline was you had to complete the survey by that time, and then between December and January, our testing agency compiled all of the data analysis from your responses. Next slide. In February, we had the second practice analysis committee meeting, and at that committee meeting, we looked at all of the data analysis, reviewed what the second half of this is going to be about for you, and made the decision on what the test specifications would be based on what you told us your practice consists of at that meeting. Now, then it takes another full year between February of 06 and January of 07. CBIC then develops the new CSE examinations. The new examinations have to reflect the new current content outline, so a lot of new questions have to be written and piloted. We cannot put a test on the exam unless it has been initially piloted to assure that it's getting valid and reliable responses. On January 31st of 2007, the new content outline will be available on the CBIC website. And the content outline will take effect in the examinations that began July 1 of 2007. So as you can see, this is a two-year process to develop, implement, and analyze the practice analysis and then develop a new test based on that data. Next slide. Now, the survey recipients. For the 2005 practice analysis, we used for the first time a web-based technology. And we emailed invitations to all of the CBIC email database, all of the APIC email database, and all of the CHICA Canada email database. And in addition to that, we also use the Saudi Arabia ICP email databases. We are starting to look at, are the same practices consistent in other parts of the world. And so for this practice analysis, we included Saudi Arabia in our survey participants. Next slide. The demographic information that we are we're interested in that's included on the practice analysis is the years of experience, and remember that our CIC exam is targeted at a two-year practitioner level. The type of facility, the bed capacity of the facility accreditation, the number of ICPs, the hours per week spent in infection control activities, and the certification status of the person completing the survey. Next slide. Sources for the task list. In other words, what the practice analysis consists of were specific tasks that we felt that the advisory committee felt ICPs in today's practice were doing. Now, how we collected and obtained what tasks we should include, we used the most recent practice analysis, which was from 2001. We used job descriptions for ICPs, performance appraisals, and syllabi from ICP courses. So we tried to look at the various things that would define what practice should be for the ICP to develop our task list. Next slide. Then we developed major categories for the core task. And in the case of the 2005 practice analysis, we used the major categories that were in the 2001 content outline. And those categories are listed on the slide here. They include identification of infectious disease processes, surveillance and epidemiological investigation, preventing and controlling the transmission of infectious agents, employee health and occupational health, management and communication, education, and research. So those were the broad categories, and then we had multiple tasks under each category. Next slide. Then what we ask, we developed a rating scale, and we asked the ICP completing the survey, in your role as an ICP, considering both importance and frequency, how significant is the task to safe and effective performance of your job? And the rating scale is listed there from 0 to 4, from not necessary to the job to extremely significant. Next slide. Now, the 2005 practice analysis, because we used email technology, we were able to distribute it to many more people. In 2001, we distributed it to approximately 5,000. But in 2005, we distributed it to 9,590 people. 1,304 were bounced back with undeliverable emails, and we got a response of 1,809, which gave us a 21, almost 22% response rate, which is very similar to the response rate from our paper practice analysis in 2001. Next slide. So now we distributed, and then after reviewing the results, the advisory committee sat down. They looked in detail at each and every task item. They looked at all the demographic information. They looked at what defines practice for what you've told us defines practice. And then we did a statistical analysis that identified the core tasks that are common to the practice of all ICPs. As I said before, we're now practicing in many, many settings. So for a single certification exam to be appropriate, we have to focus down the elements of the job that would be important for everybody, regardless of which area you are practicing in. And that's what the statistical analysis does for us. It lets us know that, yes, these are important. These are the key items. And then the statistical analysis determines how each task should be weighted on the examination. You know, how important it is, how many for each category. I think when we did our last teleclass, we talked about how to use the content outline, and the content outline is in the back of the candidate handbook. It's a great thing for you to use in your study and for the exam because it actually tells you how the exam is broken down. So you'll read a heading such as identification of infectious diseases, and you'll see a number in parentheses behind that heading. That number tells you how many of the 135 scored questions on the exam would fall into that category. So you can see, you can target your studying based on the weighting of the importance of the different main categories. And so the end result of this whole process is we have a new content outline for the 2007 CIC exam. Now, as I said before, you will see that content reflected in the test starting in July of 2007. So kind of to sum up my section here, what I'd like to leave you with is the understanding that the CIC exam is not developed in a small by a small group of people that may or may not be in touch with reality behind closed doors in some secret process. But instead, those of you who took the time to complete the survey, and you are the ones that defined our practice, and you are the ones that defined what would be included in the next CIC exam. And with that in mind, my last comment would be an urge to all of you, since I know ICPs tend to stay in the field forever and ever, the next time the practice analysis will go out is in 2010. And I really strongly encourage you to take the time to complete the survey. It takes about 30 minutes to do, and the impact it has on our profession and how we define our jobs is very, very critical. So with that, thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Linda. I would encourage everyone to go to the next slide because next up to share the actual results of the practice analysis is Ruth Kircho. Ruth has been in infection prevention and control for some 18 years and is currently the director of that department for the Unity Health System in Rochester. She is president of the New York State APIC Coordinating Council, but the reason that she is here with us today is that she chaired the Practice Analysis Committee for CBIC. So to present the 2006 Practice Analysis results from Rochester, New York, I'm pleased to present Ruth Kircho. Ruth.
Hi, thanks, Paul. I really appreciate the opportunity to go over the practice analysis results with all of the participants today. And so if you would go to the next slide, it says this section we're going to describe the variables that the ICP survey of those who responded to the survey. Next slide, please. Among the things that we asked folks to respond to, and we just wanted to get a feel for who are those of us that are working in infection prevention and control? Linda made a great comment that most of us do stay in the field forever, which is good because we have a long history then of it. And so we asked our respondents to indicate the number of years they have worked in infection control. And so next slide, please. You'll notice that it said that we've had, in this survey, the greatest number of folks worked in the profession for 2 to 6 years. This is really significant and really very interesting to myself in particular and several of us who were on the previous practice analysis task force. The task force or the practice analysis from 2001 showed that most of the respondents were people who had been practicing 15 years or more. And now 5 years later, this one shows that the most of the people who did respond, or the greatest number, were in that 2 to 6 year age group. And I'm sure all of us noticed this. Within our practice, we have some new colleagues that are really just getting started or have been in the field for just a short period of time. Next slide, please. As far as where did they normally work or where were the most of them from, Most respondents indicated that they work in a community-based hospital, and as you can see from the slide, there was quite a number of people responding from a whole lot of different areas, and that was one thing that was very good for us, that we thought people really took the time from all different areas and all different types of healthcare facilities to respond to the survey. Next slide, please. Actually, the next couple of slides will give us the information as far as the demographic information related to bed capacity, hours worked, et cetera. And as you can see from the slide, most of the respondents indicated that they worked in a hospital, a community-based hospital, of 101 beds or more. Most of them worked 40 hours or more every week, and I think all of us can relate to that. And when we asked about the number of ICPs per facility, the greatest number indicated that there was only one ICP per facility for their particular facility. We also asked about facility accreditation, and the majority of folks did indicate they worked in a facility that was accredited by an organization that had infection control or infection prevention standards. And then we also asked about whether or not they themselves were certified, and more than 60% of the individuals responded indicating that, yes, they did have their certification, and we're very pleased to see that, and we'd like to encourage those that haven't achieved their CIC status to take the examination and get certified. So basically, in summary, as far as the demographic results are concerned, and there's the next slide, and I've been forgetting to say next slide, but I've been told that everybody really is pretty comfortable with these things, so I apologize for not indicating next slide each time. But the demographic summary indicated that, for the most part, our respondents for this practice analysis for 2005 had 2 to 6 years' worth of experience. Most worked in a community-based acute care facility. Most facilities had 101 beds or more. Most were accredited. Most individuals were the sole practitioner or the sole professional in their institution that was dealing with infection prevention and control, and worked 40 or more hours per week. And 53%, I was a little bit wrong when I looked at the previous graph, 53% of them were certified. So I think that gives us a very interesting, a very good example, and this was for all of the areas that Linda had indicated where we had sent the surveys to, the United States, to Canada, as well as to ICPs in Saudi Arabia, using their database. Okay, next slide, please. Besides knowing where the people worked and as far as how long they worked, how many ICPs there were, et cetera, one of the things that we wanted to determine was, were the respondents or did the respondents feel that the survey that they took actually covered the most important activities that ICPs do on a daily basis. And we were gratified to find that approximately 98.5% of respondents felt the job analysis survey at least adequately covered the important activities of an ICP. And as you can see from the slide, they were either completely covered, with only a few folks saying that it was inadequately covered. Next slide, please. This section, what I'm going to go over now, this section describes the practice variables as we have evaluated them from the survey. These were the things that we were really looking at when we had the second meeting in February. After the survey had gone out, respondents had come back, and AMP had done the statistical analysis on each and every one of the tasks that were included on that survey. Next slide, please. Remember the survey rating that Linda mentioned? This is really where we got the statistical information from. It was where we asked folks to reply whether it was anything from not necessary for the job to being extremely significant, and it was from the answers that we got on each of those particular tasks that were on the survey that we ended up devising and the the content outline, which will then go into effect next year with the first with the examinations on July 1st, starting July 1st of 07. Next slide, please. I'm going to talk a little bit about what's called decision rules, and this is really how we ended up taking all of those responses, looking at what was necessary and what was not necessary on for the next content outline. The slide that you have before you shows the tasks on the left-hand side, the tasks, what they needed to be or what the decision rules were, and on the right-hand side of the slide shows that what criteria had to be met for the particular task to either remain on the content outline or to be removed. So I hope I'm going to be able to cover this and make this a little clearer for everybody. In developing the test specifications, the committee judgment had to be used in interpreting the data gathered through the job analysis survey. We had wonderful help from that, though, from our psychometrician from AMP, because they were able to really define very clearly what a particular statistic meant. As a result of going through all of that, several decision rules ended up being proposed for consideration, and then we ended up making the various decision rules, which ended up in the content outline. So first of all, among the decision rules, the first one, very basic, ICP needed to find that the task that was being analyzed would be necessary for the job. And I think that's probably goes without saying. And at least 84.25% of the respondents indicated that the various tasks were, that most of the various tasks were necessary for the job. In other words, if it got higher than what they have there, what's 15.75%, then those would be kicked off of the exam. And as a result of just looking at that particular decision rule, and we took the whole 150 different tasks that were on there, 13 of the tasks didn't meet the criteria. So 13 of the tasks were removed from the decision rule itself. And I'll go over the different ones that were removed when we get through this particular part. So that really put to rest several of the biggest majority of the tasks that were going to be removed from the examination content line. Secondly, the ICP needed to judge the task not only as being necessary, but that would be significant. When we say how we determined that was, if you remember on that survey scale, you had not necessary, you had minimal significance, then there was somewhat significant, then quite significant, and then there was extremely significant, and those correlated to the numbers 0 to 4. Taking the things that would meet the highest level as being extremely significant, giving them a score of, say, 3, and those being somewhat significant, giving those a score of 2, we kind of wanted to make certain that we got the greatest amount and took an average. So any task that didn't rate what was a 2.5 in significance, that got dropped off of the content. So the task itself had to have a specific rating of 2.5 for significance to remain on the content outline. Decision rule, only one more task ended up being removed from the content outline. So at this point, we had 14 tasks that were removed from the content outline. This is from the content outline that we originally had tweaked that was used in the 2001 practice analysis survey. A couple other things that needed to be made or that needed to occur as far as decision rules. The task had to be significant to a moderately experienced ICP, which is one of the reasons why we were looking at the demographics as far as years of experience. It had to be significant regardless of the work setting. And as a result, also it had to be significant regardless of the amount of time spent working in the profession on a per-weekly basis by the ICP. For all of these decision rules, when we looked at them, they had to have a rating of greater than 2.4. Anything that didn't meet that 2.4 cutoff got dropped. but there wasn't anything left to drop. Everything else met those criteria. So in the end, what we ended up doing was dropping a total of 14 original tasks that were in the content outline that was developed in 2001. Next slide, please. And this gives you by number, and I'm going to go briefly over the different tasks that we removed, but it gives you a summary of the number of tasks. And since you don't have the content outline before you, it doesn't really give you a whole lot of additional information, except to say that with our first decision rule, we removed 13. With our second one, we removed another one, and no other additional tasks were removed from the content outline at that point. So next slide, please. Excuse me. So let's look at the tasks that were removed from the outline. These won't be considered for the 2005-2006 practice analysis. They included utilization of pre-designed surveillance software packages for IPC programs. They also included contribute to the development of surveillance systems for non-infectious adverse events, collect data relating to pre-, inter-, and perioperative antibiotic use with the surgical site infection rates, and use advanced statistical techniques to describe data, for example, chi-square or an odds ratio. Next slide, please. A couple more of the tasks that were removed was to integrate the cost accounting data into the analysis of healthcare-associated infection reports, prepare and manage the IPC program budget, facilitate communication of IPC information to the public and the news media, interviewing and personnel selection, performance evaluation and counseling, and the last five that were removed was to develop competencies to evaluate IPC personnel, assist in funding proposals and grants, participate in various research activities such as data collection, analysis of data that has been collected through a research activity, conduct research in infection prevention and control either by themselves or collaboratively with other folks, and participate in the monitoring and evaluation of antimicrobial use. One of the things that I think that I found to be of great interest when we went through the various tasks one by one, in the content outline from 2001 practice analysis, we had seven core areas around which the test was developed, one of them, number seven, being a separate category for research itself. With the results of the 2005 practice analysis, one of the things that we found quite distinctly was many of the questions and many of the tasks listed that were specifically related to research did not meet the decision rule one or decision rule two. and we're therefore eliminated. That doesn't mean that we've completely eliminated research from the content outline. But what we've done is to combine that with education, which is where the topic of research had originally been located in the practice analysis prior to 2001. It was education and research. In the practice analysis of 2001, we broke it out as a separate category based upon the responses that we got back at that time. And now we've regrouped it back in to education based on the responses that we received from all of you who participated. Next slide, please. After we had done all of that, had made the decision rules, determined what number of core categories would be, and the various tasks that would be removed, i.e., or keeping, on the other hand, what tasks are going to be remaining, one of the things we needed to determine then was how complex should various tests or various questions be. But before I missed a slide because I wanted to mention what our major content headlines were or headings were. After I got talking about research, kind of got off track. In the 2007 content outline, one that's going to be up on the website at the end of January, there are the following, they're on your slide, identification of infectious disease processes, that's always been part, surveillance and epidemiologic investigation, infection prevention and control, program management and communication, education, and research. Actually, we need to make sure we put research in there because it's education and research, and the infection control aspects of employee health. Now, next slide, please. We can go on to the cognitive level descriptions. This is where I was starting to talk about. Once the number of items got determined, the next step involved defining the cognitive complexity of the content, i.e., what type of questions are we going to be looking for or are we going to be putting onto the examination to address each of those areas under the various headings. There is a complexity scale that we've been using AMP helped us to use over the years, and the cognitive levels are listed there on the slide, the first being recall, and that's something that, you know, it requires only the identification or recognition of some isolated information. A good example is, you know, we all use it, the formula for calculating, say, an attack rate, or a formula that we use for calculating a device-related infection rate, et cetera. That's basically a recall subject. The next level of cognitive description is application. This is where the question is posed to you and you need to do some interpretation or manipulation of the data in your mind to come up with the correct answer. Another example I can give would be you have an increased VAP rate, and a question relating to that would be such as identifying risk factors or identifying measures to prevent VAPs, et cetera. And then the last cognitive level is analysis or evaluation, and these are the most complex forms of questions that will be on the exam, where in most instances a scenario is given, and it requires integration or synthesis of a variety of concepts so that you've got to pull some things from your recall, et cetera, to come up with the correct answers to the scenario. And when these are posed, there's usually the most easy example I can give you would be where a scenario is given and then several questions based on that scenario are asked so that for your answers. That pretty much wraps up what the analysis was. I hope that folks were able to follow along with that. And I do want to stress again what the important dates to keep in mind being that January 31st, the new content outline goes up on the CIBIC website. And then again, as Linda said, in July 1st, the new CIC exams will be based on this new content outline that will be going up on the website in January. And we're in the process also to prepare and actually publish the whole process through AJIC, as was done after the 2001 analysis. Certainly, we're open for questions if you folks have them, and if not, I thank you for your time in listening to me.
Ruth, you might add that we also will be publishing it in CHICA simultaneously, the CHICA journal.
Good point. As a matter of fact, I just really was going through some stuff that I had gotten from Sheila and from Jerry, and I have it on my calendar to make sure that they both get it at the same time.
Ruth and Linda, I thank you very much. I've been sitting here amazed and impressed at the complexity of this process. And you go through this every 5 years?
Yes.
God bless you.
Yes, we do. And I was very pleased and very happy and honored, actually, to be able to chair the committee this time around. My first year that I was on the CIBIC board, which was 2001, was the time that I actually had an opportunity to be a participant on the committee, and it's a fascinating process. A lot of hard work, but a fascinating process.
Why Saudi Arabia?
Well, it's primarily because we have a ready email base to the ICPs in Saudi Arabia. One of our physician board member on CIBIC is one of the lead infectious disease physicians in Saudi Arabia. And through his contacts, we had access to that group of people. Email accesses to other groups were not as readily available at that point.
I think also you might want to mention, Linda, that a number of the folks in Saudi Arabia who he works with and has collaborates with have already taken the exam, so that they're familiar with the exam itself.
That's right. They have a large number of certified ICPs in Saudi Arabia.
Do the results from Saudi Arabia in any way skew the overall results?
Probably not. We looked at all of the various, as we were going through the decision rules, for the tasks that were removed, I don't think, based on the demographics, the information, the number of years practice, the hours worked, the site of practice, et cetera, along with the tasks that were removed, I don't think there was anything that really could tell us that it was skewing us because of folks from Saudi Arabia participating.
We have always stated that the CIC exam is a North American practice exam, and that is defined by the fact that that's the group of people we have surveyed. As we move forward here, we're looking at a more global concept of would the exam be applicable to other areas and other parts of the world. And at some point, we will address that, hopefully by the next practice analysis. The primary limiting factor is money. I mean, the expense of the practice analysis to go worldwide is enormous. And so at this point, we dealt with our first step, which was going to one readily available group outside North America that we had access to.
Linda and Ruth, you did an exceptional job with that presentation.
Thanks, Jeanette.
I congratulate you.
From
you. I do have a question. Near the end, on the wrap-up slide, it said on July 1st, 2007, examinations will be based on the new content.
That's
correct. People who have to recertify next year and want to take the SAIR exam and get that early in the year, can they do that?
Yes. The new the SAIR 7, wait a minute.
Oh, yes,
Sharon,
are
you online?
It's not going to be available, I believe, until July. But they'll still be able to get the SAIR 6. If I'm not wrong.
No, it's possible. It depends on how much we have left of SAIR 6. The SAIR 7 may be available earlier than that. So they could ask, the national office at what point. In the last time we ran out of SAIRs, and so the new SAIR was made available in, March or April,
mm-hmm.
which was earlier than we thought. So it depends on the status of the existing stock.
Okay. Thank you.
My question is also about the study guide. The certification study guide by Christine Noddy that we have is 2003. When will be the next book available? When is it going to be published?
I'm really glad you asked that question because I need to make it very clear to everyone. CBIC does not produce the study guides. Those are produced by APIC. APIC and CBIC are two separate organizations. Now, if you think about it just a minute, we develop the exam. We write the actual questions for the exam. Therefore, we are prohibited from educating on the exam. APIC is the professional organization for infection prevention and control, and their primary function for ICPs is education. So they develop the practice study guides, as well as the any cert prep courses that are out there. We do not provide input into that. We are prohibited from it. They do use the content outlines in developing their study guides and courses, at least that's my understanding. But those are not produced by CBIC.
Probably safe to say that they would be on the ball and would probably be producing a new one before too long.
I would assume so. And the data on that, they recently asked us for the revised content outline, which isn't quite ready, but will be sent to them as soon as it is ready. Let me explain one other thing about prepping for the exam. CBIC does offer an online practice exam. It's an online exam of 70 questions, many of which were retired from old exams, that helps you learn the process to do the computerized test. That we do offer, but its intent is to help you get familiar with the process. Yes, many are actual questions, but it's not a preparation. You know, these are the questions on the exam now, and you need to be prepared for that, you know.
Does a new study guide usually coincide with new CBIT content?
Usually. But, I mean, once again, I can't speak for APIC Education Committee on when or where or how.
Thank you.
Hello, Linda and Ruth. You did a great job. And I do wish you would comment, because my colleagues have mentioned in our APIC meeting that, well, they will get the test results back from the SAIR, and they will have the explanation and the references. And I think maybe we might need to mention to them the process that will not be in particularly the, you know, the event that's going to happen in the future. Some of them may take it, even if they do not complete or pass it, with the intent that they will have the explanations given to them.
Right. What Pam's referring to is the SAIR exam is sold both as a process for certification as well as a educational process for preparing for the exam. Beginning with the SAIR 7, which is the SAIR for next year based on the new content outlines, it will no longer be sold as a self-assessment. It will only be sold for certification. It'll be the same way. It'll be, you know, in essence, a take-home test, but you will not, in the end, get back the complete description of the results, you know, what was wrong, what was right, and why, and all that.
Thank you.
You would like to know whether are you still going to conduct the old exam, or would you advise getting the new version on July 1st, 2007?
Well, I think it depends on whether you're ready to take the exam or not. If you're ready to take the exam, then use the current content outline, the one from 2001, and proceed on to take the exam. If you're at that point where you're just about to approach your two-year practice requirement, then you're not contemplating taking the exam until July, then you would want to get the new content outline and study for that.
Can it be said that the new exam will be simpler than the old one, or just
no.
More applicable?
Equal. It hopefully will better reflect current practice. Is that right, Ruth?
That's correct. There wasn't many things that actually ended up, many tasks being removed. As you noticed, a couple of them were related to using already prepared software packages or some complex things related to research. There's still, you know, those are probably the few things that you won't find, but overall, the complexity of the exam that we have currently and the new one that will be coming out will be essentially equal.
Right. We have time for one more question. I'll ask a final time. Does anybody have a question? So thank you to all for coming along with us today, and a very special thanks to Linda and to Ruth. You did a fabulous job, and I sure appreciate it. I look forward to speaking with all of you again very soon. Goodbye.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.